This is Jan Swift, and you're listening to Discover Lafayette, a podcast dedicated to the people and rich culture of Lafayette, the gateway to South Louisiana. Today's podcast is being recorded in the offices of Raider Solutions. Raider creates and maintains technical strategies for businesses of all sizes across the country, as well as right here in Lafayette, functioning as their complete IT department. Raider's motto is, "You just want it to work, we understand." If you're wondering if Raider can help your business, please visit RaiderSolutions.com. I'm very proud to welcome Iberia Bank as Discover Lafayette's premier sponsor. Founded in 1887, Iberia Bank is the largest bank based in Louisiana and is headquartered here in Lafayette. With 329 combined locations throughout the South, they offer the resources of a national bank with the personal touch of a community bank. Iberia Bank supports educational, cultural, and business development efforts that make a difference in the many communities they serve, including sponsoring this podcast. For more information, please visit iberiabank.com. Will LaBar is our guest today. Will is a native of Somerset County, New Jersey, and graduated from Rensselaer Polytechnic Institute in Upper State, New York. After college, Will moved to Northern Virginia, where he met his future bride, Carly Alm. He dated Carly long distance for a year and took a leap of faith by moving to Lafayette in 2000 so he could be close to Carly as she worked in Church Point for Teach for America. Will worked for American Management Systems, which was purchased by CGI in 2004. Will LaBar currently serves as Vice President of CGI Federal's Digital Service and Onshore Delivery Center programs, which has 7 centers across the U.S. and has created more than 1,600 jobs in partnership with local communities and universities. 450 employees are based here in Lafayette, and CGI plans to add to that number of workers to reach 800. Ever wonder how big CGI really is? It's the world's 5th largest independent IT and business process services company with over 74,000 members and 400 offices across 40 countries. A lifetime soccer player and fan, Will has served as captain of his college men's team and has coached soccer locally at LYSA, CSC, Notre Dame and Crowley, Lafayette High School, and St. Thomas More. He helped lead SDM to 2 state titles and 3 state titles with his club team at LYSA. And Will, there's so much more to your story, but I want to welcome you to the show and thank you for all you're doing for Lafayette. Welcome.
Well, thanks for having me here. It's an honor to be able to chat with you about what we're doing in the community. And
you know, we all hear about CGI in the news, but I thought it would help to put the voice and the story to the person that's leading the charge here in South Louisiana. So if we can double back to your story, you know, about you and Carly, you've been here now 19 years, which is half of your life. I mean, you've kind of grown up here now that you're out of college and you moved here as a young man. Can you talk about the culture shift that was for you?
Yeah. This is definitely home at this point. I guess as I've you know, progressed in my career, in my life, I've moved further and further south, right? I started trying out to go to New York and then decided it was too cold, I guess, right? And then went to Virginia and then ended up here. But, you know, culturally, it's just a huge difference than, you know, where I originally grew up. The people here are just incredibly friendly. The food is just really rich and diverse. The French Canadian heritage here actually appeals a lot to me because my father was actually born just outside of Quebec City.
Oh.
He was a dual citizen actually. So when I moved down here, I was like, oh, surely I'm going to find like a secret patch of LaBars that I'd never heard of before in the family, and turns out there weren't any.
But, so that is a French name.
Yeah, absolutely.
Was it spelled differently? Like, was it a capital B? LaBar?
Yeah, capital B. Then, you know, if you go back through our genealogy, it goes like 2 R's and an E at the end.
Oh.
Right?
Wow.
But, I was like really excited to kind of move to a place in the U.S. that could allow me to connect a little bit to my French Canadian, you know, heritage.
Where's your family? Are they still up north?
They're all over the place. So my mom is retired in Asheville, North Carolina.
Yeah.
I have a brother who lives in Portland, one in Colorado, and a sister in Massachusetts.
Well, good places to go hiking.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah, so you came here, I mean, you know, I don't mean to make light of this, but you moved here for love. You wouldn't have thought,
yep,
I'm sure,
right.
Lafayette, Louisiana, just off the top of your head. I mean, I'm sure this wasn't on your radar until Carly and you became more serious. And I have a lot to thank for that. But I've had one other guest on the show I want to share with you. Cian Robinson that he moved here when Natalie Harder, his wife, was asked to take over South Louisiana Community College. And we're better off, I think. But he had the same similar story, that they came to visit and he fell in love with the culture.
Yeah, he also happens to be a soccer player from the great state of New Jersey as well.
And recently got in good shape. He's probably in soccer shape again. So, yeah.
But it was at the time I was 2 years out of school, and just walked into, you know, my boss's office and I was like, hey, listen, I met a woman. I'm in love. I'm going to move down to Lafayette, Louisiana. Will you give me a shot and allow me to work remotely? And if they had said no at the time, my plan was to just move down here and become like a postman and a poet or something.
Well,
so that was my plan B.
Right.
Luckily enough, plan A worked.
Yeah.
And they trusted me to be a software developer working out of my house. And
so there wasn't an office here for American management. There wasn't
I was the only employee of the company at the time here that I'm aware of. And I was a telecommuter for 14 years until CGI made the strategic decision to put an office in Lafayette. So,
wow. Yeah. So they bought, CGI bought American Management in 2004. But even at that point, you were traveling, I guess, working with state governments.
That's right.
You were traveling around the country.
Yeah. The majority of my career in information technology has been centered around environmental and natural resources as a domain, specifically around building systems that reduce burden on industry in order to be compliant with environmental regulations and as a result help those agencies protect human health and the environment, right? So I was traveling all around the country to different states to help them sort of modernize their IT systems and how they interact with industry and citizens.
So. Now, before the interview started, you were explaining to me how some of this works. So why don't we go back over that? A lot of what CGI does is to make the interface between states and federal databases not only congruent, but easily findable. Mm-hmm. Would you kind of talk about what you do? Like, can you give an example maybe of...
Sure.
Working with local DEQs at the state level and then the federal level.
Absolutely. And it's probably good to sort of set it in the context that, you know, CGI as a global company does work across commercial, state, and local government sectors and federal sectors across any number of domains, whether it be telecommunications, insurance, financial services, et cetera. I just happen to have sort of slotted into
environmental.
But it's a good example through which to understand, you know, what it is we do in our business. And so in the environmental space in the U.S., the Environmental Protection Agency, sets forth sort of the code of federal regulations, which is how they want to protect human health and the environment. But they delegate the authority of that to state and local governments and territories and tribes. That in and of itself creates this paradigm where you have a lot of data being collected at a state and local level that needs to be communicated in some form or fashion to the federal government. And then, of course, across all of this, you want to be able to communicate with citizens in those communities about what the state of the environment is, right? Mm-hmm. And in the front end of that pipeline, you have the regulated community who needs to get that data into the state or the federal government. So what we do is we build systems that help sort of make it easier to get the data in and then compress the timeline from when you receive the data to when you can use it to make decisions or to compress the timeline to when it can get into the hands of you as a citizen of Lafayette. So you can understand, is my waterway clean?
Right.
How is the air that I'm breathing?
Or I'm thinking about moving to another state.
Absolutely.
What is it like there? How do we compare?
Right. And so the quicker you can get data from, you know, the input side of that pipeline into the decision-making side or the awareness of the community, the better. And so, you know, the systems that we build collect the data, they move it, they standardize it, help clean it up, make it accessible to like the average person who doesn't understand all of the different data elements, but understands if I open up a mobile app and I see that the air quality is red that day, and I have maybe an acute asthma problem, then maybe I should be, you know, careful about the activities I'm going to pursue. So from step A all the way to that person who's opened up their mobile phone, we are building capabilities to move that data, make it accessible to people, essentially.
So I have a question. So 50 states, and I'm sure that each state had their own operating systems, computer programmers, you know, whether they worked at the state government or they hired. So you've got to, like you said, standardize. I know that's not easy. I mean, I've worked in government before, just indexing names and data.
Yeah.
But to have to make it synthesize nationally, and I'm assuming internationally for many things, that's
a huge challenge.
Yeah.
And the credit to that actually goes to all of the employees of federal and state and local governments. This goes back to like the mid-2000s. They put forth a governance structure to collaborate across all those different jurisdictions and came up with data standards. And
so as you set up a system, you go, we're going to follow this plan.
That's exactly right.
Plan.
Yep.
So that Massachusetts will be similar to Louisiana.
So we can all speak the same language, right? And so that was a lot of government employees who kind of created that vision at a federal and state level who set that up. Yeah, like, and that's, you're right, it's not an easy thing to do.
Yeah.
And that's evolved as technology has changed over time. You know, the standards and the mechanism that you use to move data back and forth continues to evolve. And, you know, we're right there with them trying to figure out what's the next best way to do this, right, in order to meet your mission and goals.
Right.
So, and you can kind of, there's different stories, like, but if you take that into like the healthcare sector, you know, sharing data in order to understand how to address the opioid crisis. It's a different domain, different problem, but, you know, underneath it, there's a common denominator of
how do we identify where the problems are?
How do we communicate across these data systems? Mm-hmm. How do we collect the data? How do we make it understandable to an end user, whether it be a research scientist or someone out in the field, right?
Mm-hmm.
So that's a decent way to understand what CGI does. It's there's a lot more diverse things as well, but that probably is a good summary of where I spent about half of my career actually with the company. So
you're involved in the onshore delivery center program. Mm-hmm. So you're based here. You're based here.
Yes.
In Lafayette, Louisiana. Did CGI choose this spot based on you, if I can ask, or were they looking at other places in the South? Like, did you have to, beg and plead to stay here, or what was it about Lafayette?
Yep. So the
is that a good question? Yeah.
No, it's a great question. It had very little, if anything, to do with me, and had everything to do with a number of different factors. So when we started this onshore program in 2006, and we were looking to create software delivery centers in parts of the country where there's not historically a technology workforce, for example. And so, and if there's not a technology workforce there, what that creates is an opportunity for CGI to partner with a state government and a local government and a university, right? And so you have this public-private partnership that can be formed in order to diversify a local economy.
Which was desperately needed here.
Yeah. So one of the things that attracted us to Lafayette first was sort of what was happening at Louisiana at a state level. And that was a significant investment and commitment by multiple administrations to incentivize that diversification into technology fields, right? So that you need to have the right tools, you know, at the economic development level of a state, right, to work with industry in order to find the right mix of public-private partnership.
Okay.
After you have the right tools at the state level, you know, you need really strong local infrastructure. And by infrastructure, I don't mean necessarily just things like roads and airports.
Mm-hmm.
I also mean things like the LUS fiber that's here.
Which was the same time that was being debated and implemented.
Yeah, well, I think I'm not sure exactly when fiber started in Lafayette.
It started a little bit later, but it was in the talks.
Oh, in 2006. Yeah. In 2014 when we were here,
in 2006 that was like.
Yeah, so that was visionary when this community did that, and when we came and started looking at where in Louisiana do we want to locate, fiber was a key differentiator for our company. Because of the telecommunications infrastructure, you know, that comes with that.
But and then the university
also came after that
program.
Yep. Yeah. And so we're a strategic partner with them. We do internship programs, capstone programs with them, and also with SLCC. And so when you start to look at these pieces that come together, you have the tools at the state level, you have really strong commitment and partnership from organizations like LEDA, you have UL, SLCC, you have fiber, and then you have a really strong culture, which makes this community sticky. So when we hire someone here and train them in our field, they're not only do we want them to have a lot of engagement and loyalty to CGI as a company and building a career there, but loyalty to the community and be wanting to be involved in the community. And so Lafayette was just a really special mix and has been one of our most successful onshore centers in the U.S.
So, right. And you're right across the street from where we are in the Light Center.
Yep.
I mean, it's just a great location. And it's exciting to think about for our local students the opportunities that CGI and other companies are bringing. And I'd like to ask you about that. You're talking about doubling your workforce to 800, and hopefully in the future that will expand more. What path would a young student look at, Will, if they wanted to work for CGI, let's say? What local universities? Can you talk about what your typical hire should bring to the table to be considered for employment?
Sure. Well, and about half of the members of the company in Lafayette recently graduated from university. So we recruit about 50% from university systems, 50% open market. The majority of the university hires have some sort of technical background coming out of their degree. That might be something in the computer science field. It may also be in what UL calls informatics, which is kind of a blend between management and business and IT.
Okay. Right? So they understand application of the coding.
And they understand data, how to use it, and they've taken some courses in software development as well. So they're almost this. Students who come out of that curriculum are this great bridge between, you know, your real hardcore computer science talent and the business users who have complex problems that you want to solve. And in order to deliver, you know, a product that solves those problems, you need people who can, you know, have, you know, an understanding what the business objective is, translate it into something that, you know, a developer is going to be able to implement, validate that it's meeting requirements, all that stuff. So these informatics students have a lot of those skill sets. And so I think, like, you know, traditionally, you know, we're looking for students who have a computer science related degree or informatics related degree. But then there's also, we have hires who are non-traditional. If you look at me, I studied finance in university.
You did?
Yep. I was not an IT major. I've worked with...
Can you code?
I used to be able to code. They don't let me touch it anymore.
Back away from the coding.
Right now, probably there's a lot of CGI members who are fixing bugs that I created from my earlier days.
You can't do everything well.
Yeah. So I always make jokes about how, like, if you ever see my name in the comments on the code, don't contact me, because I'm not taking responsibility for it. But
and if I did it, I didn't mean to.
That's right. Yeah. But yeah, so I studied finance, and you know, CGI invests in our members for training and learning and development. And so I learned how to do software development on the job. That's what I'm trying to say is there's transferable skills from other types of majors that you can bring into the IT sector. In fact, you know, if you look at sort of how software development has evolved, there's major initiatives that are these days that are really centered around customer experience, right? And having empathy for your end users and the skill sets that it takes to really connect with end users and bring like design thinking constructs, right? Yeah, to what your end product is going to be. That's not like, I don't think you see a lot of that heavily integrated into computer science degrees these days. And so I think what you're starting to see that emerge, right, is how do we blend, you know, these types of domain areas so that you have people who are strong in technology, but also understand and can empathize with the end users of what you're going to build.
Right.
And so those other types of degrees are still really relevant to our workforce, I think.
You know, there's been a lot in the news this week, yesterday, about scandals. You know, parents paying loads of money to get their kids into Yale, Stanford, these schools that are very difficult to get in on a good day. And I really love that CGI is invested in hiring locally, because then you'll probably get employees that want to stay here. Mm-hmm. They want to put down roots, and they'll be good employees, but also grow your company locally by using resources that are right underfoot. And if you could talk about that, because, you know, there's this big push for kids in school to apply all over the country. But in fact, if you go to school somewhat where you live, I know that you moved here, but most people probably want to stay somewhat close to family and have opportunity at the same time, which is what you're helping us.
Yeah, I mean, I'll tell you right now, the talent that we hire out of UL, I would put toe-to-toe against any university graduate that we're hiring anywhere else in the country. And that's based on experience. Mm-hmm. You know, we've had members of our company in Lafayette now who have been with us since 2014. So they're in their, you know, fourth or fifth year on our teams, and they're killing it. I mean, it's you don't necessarily need to be, you don't have to think of IT as something that you need to go to, something out.
I feel like MIT or something.
Yeah,
you don't have to do that.
I think you hit the nail on the head.
Right? Yeah.
You hit the nail on the head. We're committed to growing a workforce here, and you know, stopping that proverbial brain drain that everyone has been talking about, and hiring out of local universities. And we also do relocate people into Lafayette as well, and some of them are even boomerangs. So I work with a lot of people who moved away because they couldn't find a job locally. And they came back after we opened up our center here because they were able to find the right opportunity and reconnect with their family and where they're from. So,
what is there a common, like a average age? Do you have a mainly young workforce locally?
It's really diverse, actually. And you know, like probably one of the proudest moments that I have since we opened in 2014 is when the governor was at our ribbon cutting. And he looked up at the, we have two stories, this big amphitheater kind of entrance or whatever. And he looked up and he was just really excited about what he saw. He's like, this is the face of Louisiana. And what he commented on, you know, the diversity of our workforce. Mm-hmm. And you know, diversity for us is important across gender, ethnicities, people who've come from different socioeconomic backgrounds, and age. It just sort of spans the gamut.
Right.
It's a really neat thing to be a part of.
Right. Well, I want to mention too, Ann Swanson. I know that your team leads the U.S.-wide STEM at CGI program, and Ann Swanson is known locally. But you focus on introducing students that might be underrepresented in STEM fields, which I'm assuming are young women.
That's right.
People of color. Mm-hmm. People that just may not even think of STEM. You know, science or technology. When they're looking at graduating from high school and a career path. Would you talk about that some?
Sure. So this is really important to us. And, you know, the program that Anne runs, and I can't rave about her enough. She's fantastic,
I know. And her heart.
Yeah, she's amazing. The STEM at CGI program was created in Lafayette, and it was just so successful and resonated so much with our members and the students that we were working with that we've now rolled it out nationally and internationally. I was on a call with some members in our Indian business unit just this week, and they want to start a STEM at CGI program there.
Oh, wow.
And if you trace all the way back, it started in Lafayette, Louisiana.
Did it start?
I think we're in our
opened?
Second or third year
of
STEM at CGI. Oh. Yeah, it's pretty new. And what happened was we had a couple of members who had joined CGI right out of university or college, and they CSR or corporate social responsibility is a big part of our culture. Mm-hmm. And so we empower our members to come up with something to give back to the community. And they approached us and said, we want to do a STEM camp. And we want to teach kids how to code, and we want to target students who, you know, may not have, you know, technology programs in their mm-hmm. school at all, or who typically aren't even thinking about STEM careers. And so we want to light the spark in them so that maybe they'll get that interest. Mm-hmm. And so they worked with the leadership team in the center here in Lafayette and did one STEM camp with Gear Up. Who you guys are familiar with them?
Yeah. Well, they let me just say, from sixth grade through graduation and then after graduation to target yep. minority students in particular that may not be looking at college as an option. And they help smooth that path.
That's right. Yeah. And so we found a great partner in Gear Up did a one-day camp where we were mm-hmm. doing computer building and computer coding. From there, it just kind of took off like wildfire. And so we do camps all across the country now. We do a lot of work with a program called the Congressional App Challenge, which works with representatives in different districts in the mm-hmm. U.S. And it's not a one-day camp. It's a multi-month program where you build an app and you submit it into a competition to win. Mm-hmm. And the winners can go up to D.C. and meet our elected officials and showcase what they've done. Mm-hmm. And so we started that in Lafayette, and now that's moving into other cities. So we use Lafayette as kind of like an incubation yeah. of new ideas for the STEM at CGI program.
Do you have other local partners? Are there other people that partner with you to make this happen?
And partnership's key. So without those partners, we won't be able to do this. So Gear Up is a key partner. Mm-hmm. New Vision Leadership is another.
John,
really,
Erica Williams.
Erica Williams. Yep.
Yeah.
And then like sometimes we need to like facilities and computer labs, mm-hmm. right? Because we can't use some of our devices because mm-hmm. they're, image for the federal government or something,
yeah.
right? And so we use UL Computer Labs for some of that. The library has offered their facilities to us. And so mm-hmm. it kind of like takes that public-private partnership model that I described when we were looking at this from where we put a center into, okay, how do we make a change in the community and impact mm-hmm. the community in a positive way, right? So it's so we're really proud of it. And like you mentioned, it targets women in STEM fields mm-hmm. Different socioeconomic classes that typically are underrepresented in STEM, and diversity is critical in our workforce.
But just to meet you guys, I'm thinking for a high school student, maybe in ninth grade, let's say, don't know what they're going to do, and a lot of times it's discouraging, but to meet professionals that care, whether it's STEM or anything,
makes a huge difference.
Life-changing.
Especially if that person you're meeting looks like you.
Yeah.
Right, and then now you can identify easier, right? Mm-hmm. And so we make a really conscious effort of that as well, so that we can inspire those students to pursue careers in STEM.
Yeah, that's great. Let me see. I know you're active in the community. I want to get in that you've given a lot of time on the executive committee of One Acadiana, which works, I know, in tandem with CGI and other groups to diversify our economy. Still vice chairperson of Lafayette Parks and Recreation.
Yeah.
Because of the soccer connection, I'm sure. And the Industry Advisory Board at UL Center for Visual and Decision Informatics, which you were talking about. And you've helped Leadership Lafayette. Any initiatives that are coming up, like, what's your current focus? Do you have any one area that you're focused on?
Yeah, so that's a great question. The one that resonates with me most kind of comes on the tail end of the STEM at CGI discussion mm-hmm. we just had, which is the initiative that One Acadiana has launched, 55 by 25, mm-hmm. which is, a strategic push that has, galvanized all of the school systems around the Acadiana region to increase the percentage of our working population with professional certifications up to 55% by 2025.
It's very ambitious.
It is. But like, you listen to, Natalie Harder talk about mm-hmm. this. It's, the goalposts are no longer just a high school degree, right? We need to increase educational attainment in our community in order to have the workforce we want in order to attract mm-hmm. new businesses and continue to grow, our economy.
Right.
And so I think that initiative that 1A has started is really strategic. You mentioned a lot of the things that I'm involved in, but I think the corporate social responsibility program that's spearheaded by the members in our company is is an amazing thing to see. Mm-hmm. So this is driven by all the members here in Lafayette, and they focus on environment and sustainability as one of their pillars. So we're doing a lot of work with Project Front Yard, mm-hmm. Different litter pickups.
Right.
We had volunteers out at the Rio Parade picking up beads and trash that comes off the floats. Mm-hmm. Embrace the space, all those things that are coming out of the administration with Project Front Yard. The second pillar of what we do locally is centered around education, workforce development, which is where you find the STEM at CGI program. Mm-hmm. And then the third is really about giving back to causes that resonate with individual members, like the Walk for Alzheimer's, et cetera. Mm-hmm. And so anyone could kind of pick up one of these balls and run with it, and we galvanize the resources around it to do it. So. Yeah.
Right. Well, I've asked you a lot of questions, and sitting over here, as you know, is Jason Sikora of Raider Solutions, who's our technology expert here, both in sound and computers. And I know you've got a couple of questions.
Of course I have a couple of questions. Will, thank you for making the walk across the street today on this windy, windy day.
Windy day.
Yeah, it's crazy out there.
So you said you studied finance. Why RPI for finance?
It's funny. I've had a couple. This is probably not a flattering story to tell people about different career decisions in my life, but I'll just go ahead and bare my soul here. So when I was graduating high school, I was just a really avid soccer player, I think I was fairly good at it. I was being recruited by a number of schools around the country, and I was trying to find a place where I felt like I could. Become like an active member of the soccer team in my first year of university, and I needed financial aid assistance, and so RPI is a Division III school, and so they couldn't really offer that, but what they can offer is a really excellent education. And so when I went to go visit that school, I was able to meet with a lot of professors in the school of management there, and they were on the cutting edge of blending management and technology at the time.
Okay.
And so I was like, because I was, I was playing around on my Commodore 64 back in the days. Mm-hmm. And I was like, oh, this gives me a chance to, I found them because of the soccer pursuit. And then I was like, I got this other passion, and I didn't really know what I wanted to do. So I tried finance. That got boring pretty quick for me. But I was so far into my career there, or my studies, that I decided just to kind of get the degree and get out. Mm-hmm. And which leads me to the second, driver, one of my decisions. But I was doing an internship at Nabisco, and that's when I learned about consulting. Mm-hmm. And that was a great opportunity. And I was like, I think I want to get into consulting. And so I interviewed with all the major consulting firms, in the U.S. And
so how many cookies do people eat?
Well, based on the trucks we were routing, there's a logistics system. There's a lot of cookies. I was like, I interviewed all these consulting companies, and I didn't know how to pick which one. And so I was like, I wanted to take some time off and hitchhike around Ireland. And so whoever can give me the latest start date for my employment, I'm going to pick that company. Mm-hmm. Because I just want to buy an open-ended ticket to England and Ireland. And I don't know when I'm coming back, but when I come back, I have to come back by that date. And AMS, they gave me the latest start date, September 14th
they were so
of 1998.
Flexible.
Yep.
Yeah,
and so that
really
was like, that's the company for me.
Wow. Don't you think that's good advice, though, for young people, if you can take advantage of your time before you jump in and really get too serious in your career?
And it's, one of the things from an advice on a career perspective, just to, pull that thread a little bit, is, people ask me about my career path, and I think one of the understated things is just luck that sometimes happens. Mm-hmm. If I hadn't, gone by the latest start date, I wouldn't have joined AMS. If I hadn't moved down here to be with Carly, I wouldn't have been living in Lafayette when CGI decided to be here. And certainly there's a lot of hard work and preparation that goes into taking advantage of luck when it happens. Mm-hmm. But sometimes you have to be able to, luck does happen, right?
And you followed your gut.
Followed my gut, and knock on wood, it's turned out pretty good so far.
Right, so far.
Yeah.
Awesome. Is CGI an acronym for anything, or is it just...
It's French.
Yeah, it's French.
I read that.
Yeah, so the company is headquartered in Montreal, Canada. Interestingly enough, founded on the same day that Carly was born, July I'm going to get this wrong.
We might have to edit this.
It was 22 years ago.
Yeah, July 15th, 1976, right? And I'm pretty sure I got that right. Otherwise, we can edit it out, and she'll forgive me, hopefully. But so headquartered in Canada, and originally it was for consulting for government and industry.
Oh, okay.
But at this point, and in French, it's something different, but I won't butcher it. At this point, really, sort of the brand of CGI just stands on its own without necessarily spelling it out.
That makes sense.
Yeah.
So when it comes to what you do in your job duties, what is a day in the life of Will?
Yeah, it's pretty varied, actually, right? Like when Jan described my job title, it was digital services and onshore delivery. And so about half of what I do is centered around partnering with local communities on building a workforce in the tech sector. Okay. And so that's not just Lafayette, it's Belton, Texas, and Lebanon, Virginia are the other two locations that I work with. So that's a really, like, that's like almost using one part of my brain, which is like, what are we doing from a community engagement perspective, workforce development, and all that. The digital services side is all around, how do we take things like artificial intelligence or advanced data analytics and, you know, apply that to problems that we're seeing in the government or commercial sectors. Mm-hmm. And so that's engaging with clients and client teams in order to solve their business problems. And so in any given day, I'm channel switching between a client-facing meeting, for example, on, you know, they're trying to implement a new system, help us get there, to doing a podcast with you all about what CGI is doing in the community.
Before you leave on another trip. I know you're busy.
I do a lot of traveling too, but that diversity is really cool. But so like my calendar gets packed and it's just like always kind of changing from one channel to the next on those two. So it's neat to be able to do that. So
excellent. And then finally, you mentioned AI. Do you see anything like down the tech line that's going to kind of really change the way that you guys work with data? Like, is VR even on your radar? Is that going to help in some way, or AR? Or?
Yeah.
So could you define those? VR is virtual?
Virtual reality, and AR would be augmented reality, which is, for your listeners, is more, rather than being completely sort of enclosed in a virtual world, it's more about overlaying information on your, like, what you're seeing in the world in mm-hmm. front of you, right?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Microsoft has a product called HoloLens, for example, and you could put on these glasses and I could look at a building and maybe see what the specs are, right?
Oh, yeah.
Wow. A simple example.
Gosh.
I mean, you can pick any emerging technology and there's tons of changes. The change is happening so fast. But I think from an AI perspective, one of the things that's most interesting is as you have these complex algorithms that help, you know, augment decision making of humans, right? How do you make the, like, whatever the machine has come up with, whether the artificial intelligence has sort of deduced from the data that it's learned from, how do you make that explainable to a human? How do you make sure that the algorithms aren't biased themselves, right? Because your artificial intelligence, like one example of that is machine learning, and it learns from historical data over time. Well, if there's bias baked into that data, then the results from that algorithm may be biased as well. And so I think, like, as the technology sector needs to really be looking at that technology carefully so that we make sure that we understand sort of how these in some cases, black box technologies are working so that we don't perpetuate bias or create new bias mm-hmm. in our communities when it comes to things like social justice and, you know, equity and those kind of things.
Wow.
I think that's sort of an example of like how do you take those hard technical skills and that whole domain and there's a whole societal sort of aspect of that and mm-hmm. that's a whole new workforce around ethics and technology.
Yeah.
Right? Justice and technology and making these things understandable to people. So
and I think most of us haven't given that much thought. This is the first I've heard about some of this, and I can see that over the years it would build on itself on erroneous data. Perhaps.
Yeah, it's
an erroneous premise.
Yeah, it's, you know, if you look at where there are a lot of like thought leaders in the federal government commercial sectors who are mm-hmm. starting to ask these questions, and, you know, the current administration just released an executive order on artificial intelligence and like sort of asking all the agencies in the federal government to explore this. And in there are a lot of the things we've talked about today. Mm-hmm. STEM education is critical in that executive order. And, you know, explainable AI, right? Or yeah. like understanding how those algorithms work. Like that's all baked in there. And so I think like it's becoming more and more of a topic of discussion, mm-hmm. but it's the tip of an iceberg.
Right.
Really.
Yeah.
So
yeah, we're just hitting it.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Awesome. Well, thank you very much for being here. I appreciate it.
I've enjoyed the conversation a lot.
Oh gosh, me too. And on a personal note, after talking about artificial intelligence, I do want to get in that you and Carly are the proud parents of Josie, an 11-year-old rescue.
Yeah,
who's, you've done DNA testing on.
Yeah, that was a fun thing.
Yeah, she's got like a lot of different stuff.
Yep. Yeah. So I call her a Sharp Eagle. She's
Sharp Eagle.
She's a cross between a beagle, a German Shorter Pointer, and a Chinese Sharpei.
That's really interesting.
Yep.
You know?
and so we were like, oh, we'll just invent some sort of new name and create a little designer dog out of her and see what we can do.
But so you fit walking her in and reading and taking time for us today on Discover Lafayette. Thank you so much,
pleasure.
Will
Thank
LeBar,
you.
For being here. We're very proud to have you here and very proud to have CGI growing our community. Thank you.
Thank you.
And your members for all you do. Jason Sikora, thank you, and Raider Solutions for taping the show. To Iberia Bank, we're very proud to have you as our presenting sponsor. We're very fortunate to have community support. To hear this interview and all of our interviews, you can go to discoverlafayette.net. You can subscribe on iTunes, Alexa, anywhere that you get your podcast. We appreciate your time in listening and learning more about Lafayette, Louisiana. On behalf of Discover Lafayette, this is Jan Swift.